live.
A podcast of the cinema.
I almost didn't get that turned around in time to do that.
Oh, horrors.
No one knows what I'm talking about.
No.
Because this lo-fi situation here involves me rotating the microphone back to my mouth.
Yes.
So that I can say linoleum knife.
You've got a lazy Susan happening.
Yes.
There.
You're Alonzo Duralde.
Yes.
You're the reviews editor of TheWrap.com. You're the guy who co-hosts Breakfast All Day, which is a video television program of film reviews on YouTube. Also, it's a podcast. I'm a little confused as to the differentiation between these two things.
Well,
do y'all dress up nice for the videos?
You know, ish.
Do y'all put on your fancies? Your pretties?
Our scanties? No, I mean, it's... some effort is made.
You can tell I haven't watched.
Yes, you have not.
Listen,
I mean, here's the weird
thing. You're my spouse, and I see you every day.
Exactly.
I don't need to be watching you on YouTube either. There's nothing there for me.
Had What the Flick not been canceled by TYT,
yes,
they were turning it into a podcast, like simultaneously with the video. They were putting out audio only versions. So
I guess nothing's changed.
Not really.
Except the name.
We're picking up that baton at
Breakfast All Day. Are you guys, when you post on YouTube, are you saying Breakfast All Day, formerly What the Flick, to get people who are looking for What the Flick to find you?
You know, I haven't been, but that's a good idea.
Maybe you should consult with a young...
internet expert?
A young internet expert such as myself.
Uh-huh. What does SEO stand for, Dave?
Maybe influencers such as myself could help you old-timey people learn about the internet.
What does SEO mean?
SEO?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What's that mean? What's SEO?
Search engine optimization.
Whatever.
Okay, and you're the bleeding edge hip Dave White.
I really am.
Who is a film critic at The Wrap. And
that's all I am.
And the co-host of this program.
Well, yeah.
And
but you forgot to tell who also about you being the co-host of Who Shot You.
And I'm the co-host of Who Shot You.
Yeah.
Over at Maximum Fun.
You're Mr. Podcast.
I am. How did I get here?
You're also the man for rental profits.
Do you want to explain this stupid inside joke? That
joke will never go away and never not be amazing.
Remember in the 2000s, there was a sequel, remake, reboot, whatever, of Shaft.
I have to interrupt you. That was a cough that I just gave you. As you know, because you've been my beautiful nurse all week.
Yes.
I've had a nasty cold all
you
week.
You have.
And today is the first day I feel like a human being again, and now we're going to record.
Yes.
But when I do the coughing, I'm going to require that you stop the recording and chop it out. Okay. Because there's going to be some of that.
Right.
And I don't want to bother people with it.
Fine.
They get one, you know, one beautiful cough from me.
I see.
One amazing cough. The rest, they don't need. If I give them all away, what will I have for myself? What will be left for me?
Anyway.
That's what Mariah said on Cribs.
Yes.
If I show you my piano room, what's left for me?
It was my bedroom, I think it was.
Whatever. It's like like Marilyn Monroe's piano is in her bedroom or something.
Right, yes.
And she's like, if I show you that, what's left for me?
What's left for me?
Yeah.
So, in the 2000s, there was a reboot, whatever, of Shaft with Samuel L. Jackson.
There sure was.
It did not change the world, but it was a thing that existed. Anyway, so then when it came out on home video, Paramount not only sent me like the DVD, but they sent me this crappy replica Kangol hat of the style that Sam Jackson wears in the movie and often in life.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he still does, but there was a definite Kangol period.
And he still appears.
Is that
in
still
the
thing?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Anyway, and this was clearly a gimme that was designed to be sent to video stores.
Highly flammable item.
Which still existed at the time. And the tag on the hat said, Shaft, still the man, for rental profits.
I can't get enough of that. Just in life. I think about it from time to time. Like when you're not around. Like I'll just remember that. Remember when Shaft was still the man for rental profits?
You brought it up this morning.
And I laughed so hard I started coughing again. So much sputum involved in that.
Well, laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah. No, you know what the best medicine is?
What is? Medicine.
Medicine. You guys, have you drank an entire bottle of NyQuil before? Let me tell you something about that.
You did not OD on NyQuil.
No, I took the perfect... Listen, I dosed myself perfectly. Like Sierra. You ever heard her song, Dose?
No.
Well, it's a very good song.
Oh, great.
Anyway. Each night I drank a little cup. Just that little plastic cup of NyQuil for 4 or 5 nights in a row. Listen. There's nothing better. Don't get the cherry. The cherry tastes bad. The green tastes like medicine.
They and you all taste
know,
terrible.
And you know you're drinking medicine.
Ah.
Yeah, and I
have to have a chaser.
Knocks me into a coma.
That's what it's there for.
And it also turns me into a fart factory. But no. Like you, there. Listen, you take the good, you take the bad.
I suppose. And I have to be super sick to commit to NyQuil because it's going to take me another day or two to get over it.
That's what's so great about it, because the next day. You're sick anyway. You can't move. You can't do anything other than be angry at yourself for, like, being immobile. I spent all week being furious at life about how I... And I looked like the to-do list in my head.
Oh, no.
All the tasks that I knew that I was missing and not being able to accomplish just grew and grew and grew. But you know what alleviated that?
What?
NyQuil. It makes you... The daytime, the day after you have NyQuil, you're just groggy all day. You're having a 3.5-hour nap at like 10 a.m. Wake up at 1:30 or 2 and be like, where's my lunch? Like, bring me some chicken soup. And you did? Every day? You're a very good caretaker. I mean, the apartment fell to hellish chaos, but... You kept doing some dishes and everything, even though everything was piling up all around us. It didn't go into flu. Like, I didn't have a fever.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like a truck had run me over, and I couldn't, move. So I was just like in bed, reading books and looking at the internet and watching shows. I watched so much TV. 90 Day Fiancé.
Tidying up with
lots
Marie
of Mrs.
Kondo.
Maisel, Marie Kondo. The other thing, like, we've got so much to talk about on LKTV this week, and because we didn't record a damn thing all week.
No.
I apologize to all of you Patreon folks who subscribed to LKTV and Linoleum Knife and Fork and Linoleum Nights because nothing happened. While I was in my purple haze.
I know, we have some new subscribers either got Christmas presents or, they're like, ooh,
they're like,
new
ooh,
year
I can't wait for all this new content. And it's like, Dave's sick.
Crickets. All of which to say is we'll be doing a lot of catch up over the next week or so.
Yeah. Like, LKTV we'll do tomorrow and there'll be an extra long, what's the word I'm looking for? Episode.
Episode, yeah. Yes.
And what was supposed to happen today, this episode was supposed to be our best of 2018 with Manola Dargis and Peter DeBruge, and I don't even know whoever else was supposed to come on. And we canceled on all of them 48 hours ago because there was no telling if I was going to even be up and going.
Right.
I mean,
so that's still in the hopper.
I haven't left the apartment. since Monday. Because Monday is when you were feeling sickish.
Yeah, I had one day of like sinus issues.
Yeah.
And then they went away.
So I was like taking care of you on Monday.
Right in time for you to get sick.
You woke up Tuesday, you're like, I feel good again. And I was like, I'm going to die.
It, you know, if my Facebook on this day memories thing is to be trusted.
Right.
Apparently, you and I...
We get sick in January.
We take that week after Christmas off and right. take care of ourselves yeah. and rest and relax. Yeah. And, you know, that's supposed to be recharging our batteries. And then right when
All it really is your body being like, ah, I'm resting. And all the attacking things are like, their defenses are down.
They're lying in wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and so during that period, we're fine. Everything's great. And then after the new year
I was out going to the museums. Yeah. I was seeing art. I was seeing films. I was going places. You were sitting here like a shut-in.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that word again and again. Yeah.
Then the new year comes, and it's back to work time, and then, boom, one or both of us get sick almost every year.
Anyway, also, I didn't go to the LAFCA dinner, the Los Angeles Film Critics Association awards dinner, which was last night. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
You took friend and neighbor, Gary Cotti.
I did.
With you to that. And the, I had two amazing jokes for you.
They were terrible.
Though, no, they were good. And Gary Cotti agreed. I had two amazing jokes for you to use to explain his presence.
Uh-huh.
And you denied me the pleasure.
Because they weren't funny.
Of those jokes. No. Here's, listen, listeners. Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com if you think these are the best. Here they go. Here we go.
Oh, boy.
Joke number one. You are there. Gary standing next to you, and everyone you meet, you say, you know Dave. You remember Dave. Good. Solid. That's solid. Next one. The even better one. Dave got a cold earlier this week, and then he died. This is my new boyfriend, Gary.
These are not funny.
They're perfect.
These are not funny.
No, they're good.
These are not funny for a work function.
Oh, please.
Where people are wondering where you
work function. What's your film critics?
That's my work. What, am I going to go to a plumber's convention? I'm at a film critic dinner because I'm a film critic.
Yeah, but like, those would have been good, solid jokes.
At the end of the night, Gary said, you are respected by your peers. Which I appreciated.
Right, you are, in spite of me. You are respected by your peers. Here's the one thing I miss the most. Eating Margie Rockland's dessert, because she doesn't eat her dessert.
Right.
You get double dessert. Gary was mentioning that to me today. I was like, I know.
Oh, yeah, sorry. He had both desserts.
That's the great.
There were two dessert options on the table, and he had one of each.
Yeah. And then the other great thing that I missed is the seventh inning stretch when I get up, because my butt's getting antsy and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I get up, I walk around. And somebody's security detail thinks I'm working security that night. That's always fun. It's always fun to get mistaken for security.
I don't think anybody there last night had security.
And there was no one famous enough there last night, probably. Right?
Yeah, because Regina King couldn't make it and sent a video. Ethan Hawke couldn't make it and sent a video. Olivia Colman couldn't make it, didn't send a video.
Well...
she's off making The Crown or whatever. I was like, we gave Netflix, we gave awards to three different Netflix movies. You're telling me they couldn't take 5 minutes on the set of The Crown in her QE2 costume and like...
Oh, is she QE2 now?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I got to catch up on The Crown, ain't I?
Yeah. She goes from Claire Foy to Olivia Colman.
That's appropriate.
Yeah. That tracks. Anyway, but yeah, there was nobody there, nobody bodyguard ish last night. You know, I don't think the Paps were going to go mad for Yalitza Aparicio.
No.
Although I was too starstruck to go.
You were all smitten and starstruck
she's,
by her.
She's amazing. I did have a lovely chat with young Miss Thomason McKenzie of Leave No Trace.
Leave No Trace.
Who is very sweet and has a super New Zealand accent that you would never know from the movie.
She's from New Zealand. I think we talked about that maybe when the film came out.
Could be.
And then I just forgot.
But I had never heard her non-acting voice. And in the movie, she's, you know, it's another one of those English-speaking foreigners who does, like, killer American. And then you hear their real voice. I'm like,
You know what freaks me out the most is when the child actors from those countries can come over here and nail an American accent.
Well,
when did you learn how to do
that? Technically, that probably makes more sense because children are more adept at learning languages and
they're more linguistically flexible.
Yeah,
that's true.
You were the one that told me about how your mouth forms by 12 or something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. When I was a teacher in Fort Worth, that was the that was always the thing. The younger the kid was at the school, the faster they picked up English. Like the older you get, the more difficult it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sandy Tan gave a wonderful speech.
Of course she did.
For Shirkers. Deborah Granick gave a great speech for winning Best Director. I wanted to go genuflect at Nicole Holofcener, but she apparently bolted after winning her award. But she was there for Best Screenplay for Can You Forgive Me?
Right.
Paul Schrader was there for Ethan Hawke. Most of the other side of the wind team wasn't able to make it for one reason or another. Peter Bogdanovich sent a lovely note explaining that the old showbiz adage is break a leg, and he did, apparently.
Nope.
But the guy who edited the final film spoke. Pete Docter from Pixar was there to talk about Miyazaki, who was our career achievement winner. It was interesting because through no advance intention or agenda, we wound up having an evening where most of the winners were women or people of color.
You know, right.
Our documentarian was an Asian
Jen
woman.
Jen was saying that on Twitter. Yeah.
Our editing winner was Bing Liu for Mining the Gap. And, we had a foreign film tie that were both Asian films we gave...
Well, don't tell Jeff Wells there was no agenda behind it.
Oh, no, I'm sure he knows that we're all a bunch of virtue signaling SJWs. Uh-huh. There's no getting one over on him.
No, he's too quick.
But I love the fact that I'm so excited that we honored Deborah Granick, especially because, women are being excluded from, the DGA nominations and stuff like that.
But is that also perhaps a function of a lot of people voting and that's just what happens?
Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm not saying it's an evil cabal,
Right.
Unfortunately.
I mean, in the same way that y'all's was sort of...
Organic.
Organic.
Yeah.
Is that not possible for them as well?
I'm not saying the DGA has a smoke-filled room where they've decided they're going to exclude women.
Right.
I'm just saying they didn't nominate any this year, and there were a lot of women who could have been nominated this year.
No, I understand.
It's frustrating when you see the same old titles coming up over and over again.
Well, that's award season.
That is award season.
When you get out of the critics groups awards and into the guilds and academies.
Yeah, they didn't see...
And the Globesies.
They didn't see Leave No Trace, but they all saw Green Book.
Of course. That's when things are different. So you know what I just said about it could have been just organic?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's nonsense.
There you go.
Y'all are organic.
They're nonsense. Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, and I've been saying this a lot lately. One thing that I think critics awards mean more because we see more movies.
And you have better taste.
And we have better taste. I wasn't going to say that out loud, but it's true. We do.
That's just a fact.
So anyway, it was a nice dinner. I'm sorry you weren't there, but you did stay home and watch Minding the Gap, which I'm delighted to hear.
Oh, God.
Because that was my favorite documentary of 2018.
You guys. Minding the Gap, we've talked about it a few weeks ago, before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a documentary. It's on Hulu.
Yes.
If you got Hulu, You can see it right now at home on your phone, on your television for free or forever, how much it costs to get Hulu. Or listen, if you have a friend with Hulu, you could do it that way too. It is Bing Liu. He is in his late 20s. He was a teenager. He was a skateboarder in Rockford, Illinois. And he hung out with these other kids, a boy named Zach, a kid named Kiri.
You've seen him more recently than I have.
I've already forgotten how they pronounce his name in the movie. And he just turns the camera on him for, you know, years, because Kiri is like 11 when they start, and now he's like 21, 22. Right. It's about a 10-year span.
Yeah.
This starts in the sort of like the mid-2000s. And it's not a chronological story at all. You see flashbacks to the old footage, but it's primarily a documentary about what's going on in their lives now.
Right.
And you wouldn't think there would be anything much to tell. Except there totally is a whole lot to tell. All three of these young men were kind of being low-key and or totally keeping the secret from each other. Mm. And it's that in their homes, they were all experiencing to one degree or another physical abuse.
Right.
And now it's, now they're adults. And the repercussions of that, the fallout from that is coming back to mess with their lives. Zach has a girlfriend, and they have a baby. And to call them on again, off again is an extreme understatement.
Right. It's a volatile relationship.
Yes. And some very ugly, terrible things happen. Kiri has to deal with the, you know, his own underemployment and the responsibility he feels to his mother, who with whom he lives, and memories of his now deceased father, who was the one who abused him. He has to reconcile the idea of still loving this father that hurt him. And then Bing Liu specifically sort of starts the documentary to get his mother to talk to him finally about the way that her second husband, his stepfather,
right,
was abusive to everybody in the family.
Right.
I had a knot in my stomach the entire time I watched this film. It is... There's weirdly funny stuff that happens in the way that you turn trauma into humor quite a bit. And I couldn't help but think about all the times I've told you these wild stories about my own childhood. And I'm laughing and telling the story in what I think is a funny way. And you're sitting here, you know, shocked or bummed out by the story.
Well, and you, these are even stories that you've told, like, in print. You know, on the radio.
Yeah.
And they are intended to be amusing, and right, other people react that way. And I'm just like, oh, dang.
But so, like I said, this is harrowing. And there's so much... There's such a mournful quality to it, and at the same time, a sliver of hope.
Sure.
It gets really rough in the last 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. The end of this movie, I found emotionally devastating.
And particularly with Zach, who feels the most, I think, trapped out of all of them. Mm-hmm. Not just trapped in his circumstances, he has now a child to raise, but trapped by his own inability to move forward to the point where he is, he lives with this despair, this sort of low-key, low-grade despair that is turning him into an alcoholic and makes him resentful of anyone who has changed his life, gotten to a place where they can make choices that will change their circumstances.
Right.
And that was the toughest, you know, thing for me to watch.
Did you happen to watch the little 10-minute extra thing on Hulu where they talked to Bing, like, as the movie was coming out?
Hulu did not offer that to me.
Oh, no. Okay. When I watched it, it was...
Did it automatically go to that next thing?
No, it was just on the menu.
No, I never saw that on the menu.
Well, anyway,
I'll go back and look at it, though.
You know, it's like, I guess when he was promoting the film, like, you see him go on KCRW and talk to Matt Holzman.
Oh, okay.
Do all this stuff. But anyway, yeah. He says apparently that Zach...
It was released theatrically in August.
Yeah, it had a small theatrical release. It was mainly premiering on Hulu.
Right.
But it premiered at Sundance last year.
Right.
But he talks about how... That after the Sundance screening, that like casting directors were actually reaching out to Zach because Zach is so engaging on camera.
And he's good looking.
Yeah.
Too, yeah.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but it's a thing.
You know what? Money buys you therapy.
True.
So if he can make some money doing something in the world... Listen, money isn't going to fix your problems, but it can buy a nice therapist.
Yes. It will allow you to pay someone else to fix your problems.
Yeah, to help you figure it out.
Right.
It's a... Let me tell you, also, the editing, and it won the editing award with LAFCA last night. He has this intuitive sense of how to build suspense out of really pretty mundane everyday stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this urgent emotional quality to it. Like the kind of film you have to make.
Yeah.
To get to the next part of your life. I can't wait to see what he does next as a filmmaker. I think it's truly wonderful.
Friend of the show, Robert Abley, and I talked to him last night because we were both such fans of the film. And
yeah.
He talked about two different sort of topics that he's going after that are sort of diametrically opposed. One was rather grim, and then the other one seemed a lot more upbeat. So we'll see which one comes next. And in fact, actually, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, the production company that he worked with on this was the people who made Hoop Dreams.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. No. Now, in order to complete the trilogy, because, you know, we saw mid-90s and we reviewed it.
Right.
Last year when it came out. When did that come out? September, October?
Yeah, it was a fall film.
Something like that. So I watched this last night. I finally got around to watching Skate Kitchen. We've been sitting on this Blu-ray for a while.
Right.
And have we discussed this yet? Did you talk about it a little bit?
I might have talked about it last year as one of the Sundance films that I had reviewed.
It's not a documentary.
No.
But
features a lot of real life.
Yeah.
Not a documentary.
Not a documentary.
In that there is a real life collective called Skate Kitchen, and the women who are in it are in this movie.
Yes.
But there is a narrative.
Crystal Moselle, who directed The Wolfpack.
Right. This is her narrative debut. Or her scripted debut.
Her scripted debut,
As Andy Timoner would say.
About a young 18-year-old girl named Camille, who lives with her mother in Long Island, who skates against her mother's, you know, wishes. And her mother really freaks out when she comes home with a pretty substantial injury, makes Camille promise not to skate anymore. Like a teenager,
mm-hmm.
She says, okay, sure, looking at the phone, you know. I have no intention of doing anything you say. Immediately hops on a train the next day and is like off to the city to meet up with, you know, these young women who call themselves Skate Kitchen. And like they basically invade the skate parks and shove the boys out of the way so they can do their thing. And will fight with the boys if they have to, like physically brawl. And then for the next hour or so, it becomes the best hangout movie. And the second half, it becomes a film about what will friendship look like when it is tested. And it's, and I'm not trying to make this into some big narrative jump, because the narrative is minimal in this film. There's a, just a lot of kids hanging out and doing things.
Yeah.
But Camille gets involved with a boy that she works with, played by Jaden Smith.
Yes.
Who is seamlessly added to this film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't even think, oh, wait, that's Will Smith's kid. Like, it's not...
He doesn't sort of stick out as, like, the one famous person in the
movie. Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Which gives me hope.
Yes.
For him. Because when he was younger...
No. When I reviewed After Earth, I was like, look, you know, Angelica Houston and Sofia Coppola had some rough patches, and then they figured it out later. So, like, you know.
When that kid was a kid, dad was putting him in movies.
Yeah.
Then it was not working out.
I did not see his Karate Kid, but...
Oh, well, you're in luck.
Yeah.
Because it was very bad. What he's got about him is the ability to be in a very low-key, mumbly sort of indie film, which is what this is.
To blend in with a group of non-actors.
Aesthetically, this isn't surprising in terms of, you know, if you've seen this kind of street-level indie film before, then you've seen this kind of movie before. But what makes this different is its absolute femaleness.
Yeah.
And its sort of unwavering commitment to making sure that the women's stories are what get told, even if the boys sort of crisscross in and out and intervene and and make things terrible from time to time.
I love, like, the when they're the girls are hanging out with each other and just and talking smack and all that stuff. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love the way they shoot the skateboarding sequences to, like, you know, to move your feet, or Young, Dumb, and Broke, or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
These really almost kind of lyrical moments.
Yeah.
Here's my thing with this movie, and no one has ever quite talked me out of this one caveat I have.
Okay. I'll be the one.
Uh-huh. I have, for years, been hearing female film critics, female filmmakers, female writers bemoan the fact that they hate it when movies about women's friendship wind up being about two girls fighting over the same guy.
Okay. Where are you going with this?
This is a movie written and directed by women that where the plot is ultimately about two friends fighting over the
same
guy.
You're misremembering this film then. It's been at least almost a year since
you've
seen
it. I wrote this when I saw it.
Well, then you saw it wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just telling you this right now because the stuff about the boy that wrecks a friendship is, yes, it's in the film, but that's not what the film is about.
It's not what the film is about.
It's a thing that happens in the film, but you said it's about this.
Okay.
So that's not true.
But it is.
It is primarily about this group dynamic and about the freedom of, you know, establishing their own space.
Fine, but that element becomes the motor of, like, the third act.
It becomes the motor of the third act, but it's not what the film is about.
I understand that, but nonetheless,
I'm right.
It's a major plot point in a movie.
Of course.
Well, not of course, though. If
anything could be a major plot point, that doesn't mean the film just gets derailed and becomes about that subject.
I just sort of sat there going, wait, is this what's happening now? This is what we're doing? Like, just because, again, that's what I've always heard from.
Yes.
Feminist criticism. I have heard the same thing. You know, yeah. And so I just thought, this is where we're going to go.
Well, unless you're operating on Wonder Woman Island, the guys are going to interrupt things.
No, I understand and that. So, but there were other, I don't know. I just felt like there were other stories that could have been told that weren't that story. That kind of took me aback. It doesn't mean I don't recommend the film. It doesn't mean I don't think it's wonderful and there aren't a lot of great things about it.
It's lovely.
It was in my top 25, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, that element of it, I was kind of like,
where's my top 25? You tell me. The world is waiting.
You tell me.
I've been sick.
I had to write mine in mid-December. So
That's my DVD pick, too.
Skate Kitchen?
Yeah. Or rather, Blu-ray. Or streaming.
Yes.
I'm sure it's streaming somewhere.
I'm sure it is.
Watch it. It's very good.
It is.
Watch Minding the Gap.
Yes.
Go ahead and watch mid-90s, too. It's very nice.
Why not? Do the whole trilogy.
Get them all. Collect them all.
Yeah, no, mine.
Pokemon Go.
Minding the Gap is my top doc of the year, and you know, if I had to pick, it might be my favorite film of 2018.
Really?
Yeah.
More than Roma?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Roma was my number two on my narrative list, remember?
What was your number one on the narrative list?
Come on.
Remind me.
Come on.
I'm forgetting.
Paddington 2.
Oh, that's right. You and the Paddington 2.
Me and the Paddington 2. There was like a dozen of us that listed it as the
number one. Tell me about the doggy. I need to know about the doggy. I was sick. Couldn't get out to go see the doggy. That was in my at a glance. My 2019 at a glance.
Ooh.
That showed up. And I was like, I can't wait to see the doggy movie.
Now it can be a year.
Here comes the doggy. Look, everybody. The doggy got lost, and then the doggy found a person under the snow and saved a life, and now the doggy comes home. The trailer that I have seen about 9 times, because it's in front of every film, including Roma, is they tell you every single plot point of the movie, including the ending when the doggy comes home.
Well, of course, because here's the thing. People,
it is the title.
If people, it is.
Doggy Comes Home.
If people have
what's the name of the movie?
A Dog's Way Home.
A Dog's Way Home.
If people have the remote.
It should just be called Doggy Comes
Home. If people had the remotest thought that any harm might befall this dog,
yeah,
they would not go. Because I remember people who asked me about Inside Llewyn Davis when they saw the trailer where he's holding the cat on the subway. Like, is the cat okay? I'm only going to see this movie if the cat is okay. I'm like, yes, the cat is okay. So that's why they show you the whole plot. And they're right. Also aiming it at this, like, at a family audience. But right. That's kind of the crazy thing here.
Why?
Because it gets dark.
how dark can it be?
Oh.
Doggy comes home.
Well, on the
who dies?
Edward James almost dies as a homeless veteran whom the dog is chained to when he dies.
Mm.
So, like, the dog...
Spoiler.
Who cares? No one cares. The dog, who, by the way, has a voice for the entire movie, and it's Bryce Dallas Howard.
I thought it was Reese Witherspoon.
Nope.
I hear in the trailer, every time I did the trailer, I'd be like, oh, Reese Witherspoon is that girl doggy.
Nope. Bryce Dallas Howard.
All right.
And she's like, you know, she's chained to Edward James almost and can't get
to the river.
I guess
Reese Witherspoon was busy promoting Christmas at Crate and Barrel.
Exactly.
She had a gift registry. Did you buy her something? She needed gifts from Crate and Barrel.
Seriously, she had a gift registry?
I'm sorry. Did we not discuss this?
No. I saw the commercials with I bought you this carafe, but I didn't know she had a gift registry.
Reese Witherspoon had a whole line of things at Crate and Barrel. They built what's the thing you build in your yard on the Jewish holiday?
A chuppah? No.
No, that's when you get married.
No. A souk or something? No.
Sukkot? Is that
a sukkot, yes.
I don't know what you call the building. Whatever. The thing you're supposed to build in your yard.
Yes.
To house the strangers.
Right.
Not the strangers, but you know, like...
Yes.
to show hospitality.
Right.
They build a whole thing inside Crate and Barrel that you walk into, and all the gifts that Reese Witherspoon has personally hand-selected for you to give your loved ones.
Oh, I thought you meant she had one for herself.
Well, that's really what it was
about. If you wanted to go in and buy Reese Witherspoon something, you would know what to get her.
The way they promoted it was very much a thing like, this, I'm Reese, and these are my favorite things. Like, and so ideally, you're supposed to give them to her, right? I mean, if you really love her.
If they're her favorites.
Yeah.
Well, she's working that brand now. She's got the whole book, and oy. Because we needed another blonde, famous lifestyle guru.
Oh, she is Twangy Paltrow.
I was saying, this is like Cracker Barrel Goop, right?
Yeah. This is where she is totally going.
Oh, brother.
She knows the score.
No.
She's no dummy. Get your finger in as many pies as you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who knows when the acting roles dry up? Who knows when Hollywood says, yeah, not you anymore? Mm. You never know when it's going to happen. You could be A-list. You can be Reese Witherspoon standing in the middle of CAA. Remember that day? Were you with me?
I don't think so.
I had to go to CAA to see a film. They have a screening room in there. And let me tell you, I'll never go there again to see a screening. It is a nightmare, a labyrinth, a maze to get from the place you have to relinquish your car. You can't even park. They don't let you park. Right. They take your car.
Right.
You got to go in. You got to go through the lobby. It's connected by like one corridor, like these two halves of this giant like
Andromeda strain hallway.
Pentagon kind of place. And then It's where you enter is not where the screening room is. You've got to get up to like floor 5, cross over, find a different floor where the screening room is. Never again. But when I was in there, she was standing in the lobby.
Uh-huh.
Like with just one person. And as I waited for the elevator, like 20 people just came in around her like a circle. Like, what can we do for you? Would you like some cucumber water? Like it was...
It was the scrum.
It was amazing to watch. Because she's about 4 feet tall. And all these people in suits, and like everyone's in like these black suits and black, like business dresses, you know. Mm-hmm. Everyone is like, hello. How may we serve you today, Reese Witherspoon? Have you been given all the gifts from your gift registry at Crate and Barrel? Can we get one of them for you?
Would you like this cruet?
Yes. This beautiful trivet. So, cruets and trivets.
Yes. Anyway, she is not the voice of the dog in A Dog's Way Home. It is Bryce Dallas Howard, who is overdoing it even by dog narrator standards.
Yeah.
Like, everything is just a little much. And,
Like heightened cuteness and enthusiasm. No, I hate that.
Yeah, lots of that.
I don't like that.
But yeah, to the point where like Edward James almost dies, the dog is chained to him, cannot reach the river, and Bryce Dallas Howard.
Does she drag Edward James almost to the river?
No, she can't. She's pulling, but he's like too heavy. And she's like,
is she talking to herself while she's doing it?
I was so thirsty. This movie has like there's an avalanche. There is a cougar who gets killed by hunters, and little baby cougar gets raised by the dog.
Right. And it's such a fakey looking animal. I saw it in the trailer.
Oh yeah, baby cougar is just like the worst, like Uncanny Valley creation, and it doesn't get any better as it gets older. All these. I just was trying to think, like, who is going to bring their kids to this and regret it when they all start, like, screaming and demanding to be taken to the lobby? Because it's, and it's directed by Charles Martin Smith, who starred in Never Cry Wolf.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a lovely movie that is.
Yeah.
Never Cry Wolf. Mm-hmm. If you guys have never heard of it or never seen it, you should.
Yes.
It's from 1980.
80, 81?
80, 81, 82-ish, in there. What a great movie that is. Yeah.
I will give this movie credit, especially coming off my season of Hallmark. The central couple in the movie, the like dimply boy who is the son of Ashley Judd and his girlfriend.
Right.
Interracial couple.
All right.
And one of the, and along the way, the dog gets...
You're looking for them everywhere now that you've been inundated with nonstop white people, white devils.
Well, get this.
All Christmas season long point, from Hallmark.
The dog is taken in by an interracial gay couple.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So a kid's movie has this gay couple in it, and they don't underline it for you, but it's right. obvious. Like, they have a house together, and there's pictures of them together on the mantle, and they walk the dogs together, and, like, they are a couple. And I was like...
Dudes or ladies?
Dudes.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, movie. Okay. Right. I'll give you that one.
That's fine.
Because, again, I think there's been this thing where that's one of the last sort of on-screen frontiers is like family films because...
With gay couples in them.
Yeah.
Or gay anyone in them.
Gay anyone in them.
Because, well, you know, because if you're gay in the same...
You have to explain 50, butt sex to a five-year-old.
Yeah, if you're gay within the same 50-yard radius of a child,
yeah.
You're unfairly influencing someone else's kid.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they will walk right up to a four-year-old talking to a person of the opposite. They will walk right up to a four-year-old boy talking to a four-year-old girl and go, "Is that your girlfriend?" Uh-huh. You know, like,
because that's not traumatic.
No, that's not influencing them at all. Yeah.
you know, but this Dog's Way Home did stepmommy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, by the end of it, like, when the dog comes home, it's like, I think Christy actually heard me say out loud, "GD it." Because I was like, ugh.
This is a clean podcast. We don't swear on it. You want that, you got to go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Mm-hmm. Get on to Linoleum Nights.
Subscribe to Linoleum Nights. You get all the F swears you want.
Anyway, but I was just like, all right, fine movie. You get a few, you've milked a few tears out of me because right. I'm not made of stone.
Right.
But overall, it's jive.
All right.
Mary
Queen of Scots.
Yes, which you did finally.
Watched that while I was sick. Uh-huh. That's a good movie to watch while you're sick.
Well, because you look better than a scab covered Margot Robbie.
I don't think I do. I'm looking at her, covered with the pox and the boils, and thinking, uh-huh. "You're still Margot Robbie.
Oh,
you still look great."
But you know that she was in the makeup chair going,
"She was loving every minute of that.
Oh, more yeah. scabs.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They had her on her eyelids. Like she uh-huh. was.
Can I get some pus in this one?
It was like she's auditioning for the remake of Basket Case. It's like, it was not. She is so. She is so game.
Oh yeah,
to be roughed up by this movie.
Yeah, she is ready to be unpretty.
Saoirse Ronan plays Mary, Queen of Scots.
Mm-hmm.
Margot Robbie plays
QE1.
Yeah, OGE OG Elizabeth. And you know this? Do you know the story? You know the story. If you're American, maybe you don't know the story. Mary, born in the United Kingdom. I didn't even call it the United Kingdom back then.
Great Britain.
It was the 16th century after all. Whisked off to Paris or France or wherever, raised there, comes back to claim her throne because she actually has a greater claim on the throne than Elizabeth.
Right, but she's Catholic.
But she's Catholic, so that's, you know, they've got their papists and
yeah.
They're... As you know, Protestants don't like Catholics.
At least not in the royal family.
Listen, I grew up Baptist, where I had people telling me constantly the Catholics were not Christians. And
oh,
were going
I know.
To hell.
I yeah. know.
So it's not like it's been left in the past.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't yeah. exist. I'm just saying it's not all, hashtag not all Christians, or hashtag not all Protestants.
So then they don't see each other for the bulk of the film.
Yeah, most of the movie is like sending envoys back and forth with bitchy messages.
And, she, you know, Elizabeth's trying to control, it's this gamesmanship, right?
Yes.
So Elizabeth is trying to control Mary, get her married off to, a man that Elizabeth herself, wants to be with.
Yeah, Lord Dudley.
And Mary, in turn, winds up marrying the son of one of the court. And it's listen, she falls for the first hot blonde dude that helps her out down there.
Although he and, has...
although he's got a secret.
Mm.
He's not even heterosexual.
No.
He is my very favorite thing in a film. A treacherous gay.
Yeah, this is...
How I love a treacherous gay.
This is a movie with gays, and again, with, like, you know, the main emissary between Elizabeth and Mary is played by Adrian Lester. And then, yeah, like, one of Mary's sort of key ladies-in-waiting is Gemma Chan.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's definitely a film made with a 2018 sensibility by Josie Rourke. This is her first...
Yes, she's a British theater director.
She's a theater director.
And it's written by Bo Willimon, who is best known, I think, for the American version of House of Cards.
Yeah.
And I did like the fact that, as somebody who is not super up on my... Anglo-Saxon history, I was able to follow all the various machinations and back and forths, and he maps out really well the where everybody is on the board and
what
they're doing.
It is an excellently diagrammed sentence.
Thank
like
you.
There yes, is
exactly
there is no confusion.
Yes,
about who, where each character is in the hierarchy, what they're doing, what their motives are.
Yeah, and what they really want.
Who they're trying to zoom.
Yes.
And who gets zoomed.
But the thing is that you have these two really powerful women who are unfortunately ultimately subject to men around them who are not taking them seriously and trying to undercut them and trying to stab them in the back. And, you know, while the movie never overtly says so, the fact that they are divided by religion is its own form of patriarchy.
Yes.
You know, that's keeping these two women who would otherwise, I think, have been total allies in the movie
they
says
would have,
as much.
They would have been if they hadn't been, you know.
Set at each other's throats.
Right.
I enjoyed this movie.
I enjoyed it, too. It's got a nice sort of, like I said, it's got a very 2018 sensibility, not just for its casting, but for... You know, it's themes that it's based on a book. So, you know, for all we know, this stuff went down. It's just that Hollywood decided to edit it all out.
Right.
In earlier
iterations.
Incarnations. We watched the John Ford.
Mary, Queen of Scots.
Mary, Queen
of... Or is it Mary of Scotland?
Mary of Scotland, I think it's called, from the 1930s with Catherine Hepburn. We watched that over the Christmas time off. And,
This is not that.
This is absolutely not that film. It does, however, have one, you know, I guess I'll call it a narrative problem in that it, you know, it just kind of goes from thing to thing to thing. And it tells you what's going to happen at the end the minute it starts.
Right.
And so, even if you didn't know that...
I was going to say, you can't really have a spoiler on this one, I think.
Yeah. So, well, honestly, straight up, I didn't know what happened to her.
I knew Mary's ultimate fate. I didn't quite know how she got there, which is what the movie then fills in for you, you know.
So,
I feel like
and
I've seen another...
If you can guess what the words ultimate fate mean...
I've seen other movies about Elizabeth and about, you know, that have sort of touched upon it, so...
Right. Know. Yeah. Because I don't remember that happening at the end of the John Ford version. Does it?
I don't know if it does, but I think it comes up in one of the Cate Blanchett...
I guess.
Elizabeths.
Right. So anyway. Pretty good.
Yeah. Worth a look.
It's fine.
Yeah, it didn't rock my world.
Costumes are great.
Yep.
Saoirse Ronan's always terrific.
A good bench of British character actors.
Like all of them.
Yeah.
All of them, including Mr. Bates.
Yes.
From Downton Abbey.
And Ian Hart. Yeah. And what's his face? Doctor Who plays the Fox News preacher.
Right. David Tennant.
Thank you.
Wild-eyed.
Yeah.
Unrecognizable, actually, until you look at the credits. You're like, oh, that was David Tennant.
But literally, like doing nothing but just, like basically doing the 16th century version of Lock Her Up.
Oh, yeah.
Constantly from the pulpit.
Like craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what we have not seen this week.
Mm-hmm.
We have not seen The Upside.
And hell no.
Because they screened it immediately after Doggy Come Home across town.
Yes.
So I was homesick and you couldn't get there.
I couldn't. I was at a traffic light and I looked at my phone to see how long it's going to take me to get there. I was like, no, it's not going to work.
And could it be more entertaining than Kevin Hart twisting himself into a pretzel in public in real life?
I don't see how.
Because every day is a new, this past week, every day has been a new, like, what's he saying now?
Yeah, a new fulmination.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, do you know why this movie is only just now coming out when it premiered at Toronto like 2 years ago?
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
I didn't know when it premiered at Toronto.
It was a Weinstein Company.
Oh, I see. Got it. Who picked it up after?
Who did finally release it? Like STX, I think.
Sure. Whatever.
I think it was their first number one movie.
I don't know. I guess eventually, I guess maybe I'll see it. I like Nicole Kidman, so I
hear she's barely in it.
But you know, I still like to
and
see.
And ill-used.
I hear that there's a moment where they go to the opera, so I really kind of have to see that.
Oh, yes, there is.
Apparently. As well.
I made it a point to never
watch.
I do
not care.
I never watched The Intouchables because it just looked.
No, it looked ridiculous.
Unbearably sort of sanctimonious. And, you know, I had a hard enough time with, what was the American one? Was The Visitor?
Oh, God. Yeah, with Richard Jenkins?
Yes.
That was another one.
That nonsense.
Yeah. and we haven't seen Replicas.
which is apparently
about Keanu Reeves, like, making his family into robots or something?
Or clones or something, yeah.
That, I can't wait.
We need to go.
I need to get to that.
I hear it's hilarious.
When the coughing dies down.
Okay.
We've only had to pause this recording about 7 times so far so that I can cough up a half of my lung.
Yeah, I hear Replicas is the first comedy hit of 2019, so.
I'm ready.
My DVD pick is the 2005 Lassie with Peter O'Toole. And it may have been a pick of mine before, but I don't care. It is a great movie about a dog traversing a long piece of geography to make it back home. And is not in any way as ludicrous or horrific as A Dog's Way Home is. So if you have not seen it, it's great. Get out your handkerchiefs because you will cry when that dog comes home. Spoiler, the dog gets home. That's what Lassie does. It's a great, great movie. Watch it with your kids.
We have two letters. One is short and one is so long that my voice will not make it through.
Do you want me to read that one?
Would you?
Sure.
Okay. I'll read Daniel's.
Okay.
And you read Julius.
Okay.
Okay. Daniel is commenting, referencing, his note is in reference to the episode where our pal Alicia Malone from Turner Classic Movies was our guest.
Yes.
He says, I've finally been able to catch up on my podcasts. What a great episode. A great guest and several movies I wasn't planning to see or didn't know about that I will have to see. Dave made me want to see Boy Erased. I was avoiding it because I'd had that kind of experience when I was a teenager growing up in Utah. Yeah.
that's the place to do it.
That's the thing with that old Boy Erased. If you are a boy or a girl and people in your church tried to erase you because you were queer, it's a tough movie. So is Cameron Post, The Miseducation of Cameron Post. I've been over both of them and how I think together they form the right film.
Right.
How each of both of them is missing something integral.
It's like the two J.T. Leroy documentaries.
Did I see both of those? I don't remember. Anyway, for me, because Boy Erased got the evangelical stuff accurately, that was the one that was tough, the toughest for me to deal with. And maybe someday I'll watch it again and I won't like, maybe I'll watch it again someday and not sob through the final like 15 minutes. Maybe that'll happen.
Maybe.
Okay.
All right, this one's from Julius. He says, hey all, the recent discussion of the extremely boring and not frightening mess that is Guadagnino's Suspiria got me wondering about my favorite messy movies of the past 25 years. I'm not talking about ordinary, so bad they're good messes, Showgirls. I know you disagree with that.
Showgirls is a masterpiece.
But movies that...
Don't at me. But anybody.
But movies that flirt with genius, but suffer from an overabundance of ideas, styles, tones, or tact, and end up being wildly sloppy. Number 10, Inland Empire.
I love Inland Empire. It's a crazy mess.
Running a full 3 hours, Inland Empire is David Lynch at his most stream of consciousness. Movies within movies, Polish prostitutes, murders, creepy neighbors, rabbits in living rooms, and realities within realities within realities. Inland Empire is unhinged even by Lynchian standards. It's awesomely messy, rewatchable, and deranged. 9, The Devil's Advocate. A big-budget chick tract on steroids. It's the story of a good Southern lawyer in the John Grisham vein who abandons his conscience and succumbs to the worldly enticement of the devil, as played by a perfectly hammy Al Pacino wearing a pair of heeled boots to mimic walking on hooves. Sex, decoration montages, suicide, an extended Rosemary's Baby homage, Craig T. Nelson, cheesy dialogue, and a plot that shifts wildly from melodrama to horror. It has everything but the kitchen sink, and it somehow works magic. Yep. I mean, this is a movie where Charlize Theron angrily rips down wallpaper samples while chomping on a piece of fried chicken. I have not seen this one.
I do a lot of those kinds of things while chomping on a piece of fried chicken, so...
Yeah, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Number 8, Chirac. Whoa. Spike Lee simultaneously regained his footing and lost his mind with Chirac, possibly his most angry movie since Bamboozled.
Okay.
Some of the best sequences in film history are laid right next to embarrassing asides. Due to Spike's commitment to excess, this was both the best and worst film of the year.
Okay.
That's fair. Number 7, Strange Days. Women in Hollywood...
I'm also a big fan of Strange Days.
Women in Hollywood are given so few opportunities to let it all hang out. With Strange Days, Catherine Bigelow went all out in 1990s cyberpunk. For some reason, this hasn't had a legit home video release in years, the DVD is out of print, and has gained a bit of a legendary status. However, it's a sloppy, overstuffed movie of excess that remains the best and worst of cyberpunk cinema. Number 6, Kaboom. Greg Araki's teen apocalypse movie for millennials. This is a witchy, sexy movie crammed with rampant bisexuality, crass observations, and...
Rampant bisexuality.
That's kind of a fair description. Crass observations and fear of the old guard, all of which seems more fitting now than when it was made. Coming in at a trim 86 minutes, this roller coaster of sci-fi, religious thriller, college angst, and sex comedy is the tightest film on the list. Number 5, Magnolia. P.T. Anderson's 3-hour-long ode to Altman is daddy issues writ large.
You come in here? You call me lady?
With multiple sprawling stories running across L.A., this dramedy delves into daddy issues across multiple generations, dying old men, unrequited love, surreal displays of Christianity, and musical interludes. There are so many ideas in Magnolia that it can't help but be messy. Number 4, Mother. Few movies are as overstuffed as Mother, where the base story is an allegory that could be a stand-in for agoraphobics, motherhood, abusive relationships to celebrities, and a complete retelling of the Bible, asset in one house. Still, this is an impeccably made movie. The sound mixing in theaters was particularly superb, whose whole design was to go haywire. Number 3, The Neon Demon. Hypnotic horror at its finest. The layers of irony and comedy are difficult to reconcile with this display of necrophilia, sexual assault, and cannibalism, but the cinematography is absolutely stunning, and the soundtrack lulled me into a trance. 2, Natural Born Killers. Oliver Stone made a movie whose volume starts at 11 and whose avant-garde style begins at schizophrenic and then ramps up from there. Using multiple film stocks within the same scene, Dutch angles galore, scenes within scenes, sitcom representations of childhood abuse, and a color scheme that feels like a neon-streaked hangover, Natural Born Killers is the summation of the early 90s, complete with judgment reserved for all. And number 1, Julius has written about this one before, Southland Tales. What happens when a liberal director loses his damn mind and releases a primal scream about the state of the world?
I love Southland Tales.
Southland Tales comments on and satirizes every aspect of American politics. This is an unhinged scream of multiple intertwined stories of body doubles, energy crisis, and the end of the world. With Kaboom and Mother, this is the third movie on the list featuring the apocalypse. And yet, this is a movie that makes repeated memes out of lines like, pimps don't commit suicide and teen horniness is not a crime.
Teen horniness is not a crime.
This movie is so stuffed it came with 3 comic books worth of prequel. It's sloppy, messy, and the closest to genius on this list. This is my first list to be knife, and I know there are some out there who may object to my labeling these movies as hot messes, but I like these best because they seem like they're directors at their most naked.
Are we supposed to knife this list?
Julius. I don't even know how to knife this list.
You're 100% knife, Julius.
The Neon Demon.
Well, if we're describing it as a mess, then yeah.
Okay, yes, fine. These movies are all hot messes, so sure. 100%. There's some of them I never want to watch again, but, you know, they certainly are what they are.
You wrote a whole lot.
You did.
Julius. It was a lot of writing. Thank you.
I hope I didn't go too fast.
Nah. Okay. Listen, I watched The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel without the captions, so I keep up.
Fine.
Yeah.
Speaking of things to keep up with, on our RSS feed for Linoleum Knife, we will now be featuring about once a month or so, Super Gay.
Once a month or every other week or what is it?
I think it's about once a month.
About once a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Johnny Jungle Guts and Professor Extra talk about their favorite new comics from a queer perspective. They also talk about manga and anime and other stuff, but mostly about comics. And we think they're really fun, and we think that you will find them entertaining. And if you are not somebody who is getting the new releases every Wednesday, you might want to listen to Super Gay the way that we used to watch Gilmore Girls, which is with Google open. Sort of look stuff up and check it out. But anyway, that's going to be appearing on your feed if you're a subscriber to this show. And, you know,
give it a shot.
Are we a network? I don't know. It's a thing we're doing. We're trying it out. We'll see what happens.
On the show, Johnny called us the Linoleum Knife Network.
All right. Sure.
Name subject to change. I don't know if we're a network yet. I know that we like Johnny and we like this show and we think maybe you guys will like it and we want to, you know, give them a platform.
So if Super Gay pops up in your podcatcher, you'll know why. It's because we're sending it to you.
Give it a listen. If you like it, great. If you don't, I don't want to hear about it. Just go click and it'll go away. It'll delete. So there you go.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And, you know, in addition to Super Gay, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney's podcasts, Cancel Too Soon, and their one over at the Schmoes Know Network, which is critically acclaimed. And check out all the other Schmoes Know shows, along with Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley and the Comics Canon and All Things Cozy. Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. You can follow this show, of course, at Linoleum Cast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Leave us that 5-star review. It is super helpful to us when you do it, and we really appreciate it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a long essay, but, you know, just maybe just say some things about what you like about the show. It helps people find it. And you can also leave positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com or SoundCloud or Spotify or, you know, all sorts of folks. Just leave us that little thumb up or whatever it is. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, as always, for our wonderful theme music. You can always go listen more to more of what he's got cooking at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. And, we will be at some point doing our
2018
our 2018 in review episode.
We're aiming for next episode.
That's the thought. So we'll keep you posted.
And then
if you're a Patreon subscriber at patreon.com/linoleumknife, we will be, you know, trying to double up this week just to make up for
last week. That's our I've got a plan.
Okay,
do you want to know it?
I know what your plan is.
Well, tomorrow we're going to do LKTV.
Okay.
And Tuesday we're going to do Linoleum Knife and Fork or Linoleum Nights, not live for nights. And then on Wednesday we're going to do whatever one we didn't get done. We're trying to get Margie back in for Fork. As for the last week's promised Patreon update for 2019, a new video to explain what's going on in 2019 and a new subscription level, the $1 level, that will come with its own special package of contents. We were going to record it this week and then illness. So we're going to do it this week. You'll be very excited when it happens.
So keep an eye out at patreon.com.
Now I'm going to stop talking for the rest of the day, because this is the most I've spoken in the past 5-6 days.
You know, you're going to be like Tilda in A Bigger Splash and going vocal rest.
That's what I'm doing.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next time. And until then.
No, I said I was done talking. Goodbye.